Welcome to the Daily Digest from Personalized Intelligence, your briefing for Thursday, July 30th, 2026, covering our macro and geopolitics edition.
Today's central thesis is that global stability is being rewritten by the deliberate engineering of supply chain vulnerabilities. We are moving from an era of optimized, frictionless trade toward a landscape defined by strategic high-friction choke points.
So efficiency is no longer the goal, leverage is.
It's a telling detail. It is a fundamental shift from cost minimization to risk mitigation through state power.
We begin by examining the escalating risks surrounding weaponized trade and energy choke points. $40 billion. That is the annual revenue Iran stands to rake in if they successfully turn the Strait of Hormuz from a global waterway into a regulated toll road. Today, we are looking at the weaponization of trade and energy choke points.
It is a shift from physical blockades to economic leverage. We are seeing a transition from the era of hyperglobalization, where the goal was maximum efficiency through interdependence, to a period of uncoordinated economic fragmentation, where nations use supply chains as instruments of statecraft.
Uncoordinated economic fragmentation. That sounds like a very polite way of saying everyone is building walls and hoping for the best.
There's a signal here: the walls aren't just made of concrete, they are made of tariffs, export controls, and maritime fees. The recent conflict between the U.S. and Iran has demonstrated that you don't even need to physically block a strait with mines to paralyze global trade. As the Rachman Review noted, Iran achieved this simply by using drones to strike a small number of vessels, which manipulated the insurance and risk assessments of the entire global shipping industry. The risk calculus of the industry changed, and the bottleneck was created without a single mine in the water.
So the goal isn't to stop the ships. It's just to make the insurance premium so expensive that no sane CEO would sign the contract.
It's a bloodless form of air power. You exert massive damage on an adversary's economy without risking domestic personnel. And the danger here is a contagion of maritime fees. If Iran successfully implements a toll for the Strait of Hormuz, other nations might see a blueprint for their own strategic assets, like Indonesia could with the Strait of Malacca.
It's like a protection racket, but with much better legal counsel and international maritime law.
It's even more complex because of the energy layer. While you can reroute oil around the Strait of Hormuz, you can't easily reroute liquefied natural gas because of the specialized infrastructure required. This creates a massive vulnerability. But the real sword of Damocles is arguably sitting in Beijing.
You mean the rare earth minerals?
Yes. China's dominance in this sector creates an extreme economic asymmetry. The Rachman Review highlighted that China could sacrifice just $1 to $2 billion in export revenue to inflict a staggering $600 billion in damages to the U.S. economy by disrupting the supply of neodymium.
That is a pretty lopsided trade. You lose a tiny bit of pocket change and we lose 2% of our GDP.
It's a massive imbalance. And while the U.S. is trying to use the dollar as its own primary economic choke point through sanctions, that very use of the dollar is driving the de-dollarization trend. We've seen China increase its trade settled in RMB from 15% to 30% since 2014. The more the U.S. uses the dollar as a weapon, the more the rest of the world looks for a shield.
So we're trading a reliance on the dollar for a reliance on what? Chinese batteries and solar panels.
That is the central risk of the clean energy transition. We might be trading a geographic vulnerability, like the Strait of Hormuz, for a technological one. China currently holds a 70% to 95% market share in the essential components for batteries, EVs, and solar panels. If you move away from oil to avoid Middle Eastern volatility, you might just land right in a Chinese technological bottleneck.
It feels like we're just running from one trap into another.
There is a glimmer of hope in the 2026 calm we are seeing in U.S.-China relations. UBS On Air reported that this current stability is actually driven by mutual economic vulnerabilities. The U.S. depends on Chinese rare earths, but China remains dependent on U.S. compute power and essential airline parts. It's a temporary stalemate.
A stalemate based on mutual hostage-taking.
In a sense, yes. But that stability could dissolve by 2028 as trade and technological models become irreconcilable. And we are already seeing the post-Polynesian shift in China's industrial policy. Chartbook flagged that China Shock 2 is no longer about low-value textiles. It is a state-led effort to target high-status European sectors like automotive and engineering. They aren't just competing on price anymore. They are moving up the value chain to hit the core of Western industrial strength.
And it's not just the big stuff. I heard there's a hidden vulnerability in our medicine, too.
You're right. The global pharmaceutical supply chain is highly leveraged. China exerts indirect pressure by supplying the key starting materials and active pharmaceutical ingredients that India uses to manufacture the generics the West relies on. If you disrupt that flow, you trigger a healthcare crisis.
It's everywhere. Even the food supply isn't safe.
No, it isn't. The closure of the Strait of Hormuz has caused direct food security crises in the Horn of Africa because fertilizer shipments are trapped. When you disrupt maritime stability, you aren't just raising gas prices, you are actively destabilizing regional populations by cutting off the ability to grow crops.
It sounds like the only way out is to stop being so dependent on everyone else.
That is the driving force behind the current shift towards sovereignty over critical inputs. We are seeing nations prioritize domestic control of energy and resources as a matter of national security. Even China is hedging. The rest is money noted that China's rapid electrification of its transport sector, taxis, buses, even two-wheelers, is pushing them toward a petrol station-free economy by 2040, which effectively insulates them from the very oil shocks they might help create.
While we're all fighting over straits and pipelines, the players with the most long-term foresight are already building the exits.
The goal is to move from a reactive posture to a structurally resilient one.
Investors in the energy and tech sectors need to reevaluate any margin assumptions based on the assumption of free and open global trade.
Watch for any significant spike in maritime insurance premiums for the Malacca Strait, as that will tell you if the contagion of toll-based trade has truly taken hold.
But if we can't even trust the routes our goods travel on, how do we manage the even more volatile struggle over the cost of money itself? So let me get this straight. The Federal Reserve is essentially just sitting there, holding rates steady for the fifth meeting in a row, watching inflation hover well above target for 5 years, and just waiting for the bond market to do its job. It sounds less like monetary policy and more like a game of chicken where the Fed has already decided to blink.
It's not exactly a game of chicken, Maya. It's more like they're trying to outsource the heavy lifting. FT News Briefing reported that Chair Kevin Warsh is effectively outsourcing monetary policy to the bond market because shifts in Treasury yields over the last 42 days have already achieved a 0.2 percentage point impact, which is nearly equivalent to a formal 25 basis point rate hike without the Fed having to lift a finger.
Outsourcing. That is a very polite central banker way of saying we've lost control of the narrative. If the market is doing the tightening for them, why even have a news conference?
Because the strategy relies on a specific type of intentional ambiguity. According to Monetary Matters with Jack Farley, the Fed is shifting toward a laissez-faire communication strategy, where Warsh is intentionally reducing transparency to let market pricing dictate expectations rather than Fed guidance. The idea is that by not providing a clear reaction function, they let the market price in the necessary discipline.
Right, but instead of disciplined pricing, we're seeing what looks like a total breakdown in the plumbing. If the Fed is playing low information poker, the players at the table are starting to bet on the house burning down.
Well, the house burning down might be an exaggeration, but the yield curve is certainly signaling deep anxiety. We are seeing a reverse operation twist, where the front end of the curve is dropping while the long end is spiking. Bloomberg Intelligence notes this directly contradicts the Fed's apparent strategy to use volatility to cap long-term yields. Investors are effectively calling the Fed's bluff on inflation control, pushing 30-year yields toward 5.2% to signal that if the Fed doesn't hike, the market will force financial tightening through much higher long-term borrowing costs.
So the market is essentially saying, fine, if you won't hike, we'll just make sure it's impossible for anyone to borrow money for 30 years. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy of high interest rates.
It's a mechanism of protection. When you see the 30-year real yield hitting 2.9%, that is a massive signal of anxiety regarding a permanently higher R-star or the neutral rate. And it's not just about interest rates in a vacuum. There are massive supply-side shocks hitting the system. Between new tariffs and the ongoing conflict in Iran, we have simultaneous supply shocks creating a structural economic trap. As Bloomberg Daybreak, Asia Edition pointed out, treating these as temporary level shocks rather than persistent drivers of inflation is dangerous. If the Fed fails to adjust for their lasting impact on global production networks, we face the risk of permanent inflation.
And let's not forget the wild card that everyone seems to be ignoring until it hits the fan, energy. We keep talking about crude oil, but it's not even the main event, is it?
No, the real driver of economic disruption right now is actually the price of refined products. Thoughts on the market noted that diesel is trading at roughly $150 to $160 per barrel, while Brent crude is sitting much lower, near $85. Refiners are capturing a disproportionate share of those margins, keeping about $65 to $70 of that $150 price point for themselves. This creates a massive inflationary pressure that is much harder for the Fed to look through than a temporary spike in raw crude.
So we have energy-driven inflation from refined products, geopolitical tension in the Strait of Hormuz threatening oil supplies, and a Fed chair who is essentially playing wait and see with the global economy's thermostat. It sounds less like watchful thinking and more like wishful thinking.
The risk is that if the Fed stays in this wait and see mode and inflation averages just 0.3% month to month through the end of 2026, they will be forced into a hike to maintain institutional credibility. There is a 74% probability priced in for a rate hike before the end of this year. If they don't act, and if the inflation data remains firm through September, the Fed might be forced into a much larger, more destabilizing 50 or 75 basis point hike to prevent a total loss of credibility.
Which would, of course, send the tech sector into a tailspin. If the cost of capital for hyperscalers and data center expansion suddenly spikes because the Fed finally realized they couldn't ignore the bond market any longer, the whole AI boom gets much more expensive very quickly.
Two things stand out. But there is a silver lining if you look at the productivity side. The long-term hope is that widespread AI adoption acts as a massive deflationary game changer, creating a productivity pull strong enough to allow growth above potential without triggering these very rate hikes.
That assumes the AI revolution can outrun the cost of diesel and the volatility of the treasury curve. It's a hell of a race.
It's the only race that matters right now. The entire structure of global capital is betting on whether technology can outpace the structural inflation of a fractured, high-cost world.
Long-term bondholders should prepare to adjust their duration expectations if that 30-year yield continues to climb toward 5.5%.
Keep a very close eye on the monthly diesel price trends. If those margins stay this wide, the Fed's hawkish hold won't last through the autumn.
But if the Fed can manage to stabilize the currency, the real battlefield is shifting toward who can actually build the most intelligent infrastructure. A year ago, the big fear in AI was some vague, sci-fi nightmare about superintelligence deciding humans are obsolete. Today, the fear is much more terrestrial, that we're accidentally building a globalized high-speed engine for industrial espionage and regulatory capture.
It's moved from existential dread to a very concrete struggle over coordinated pacing. We're seeing a massive shift in the landscape, specifically with the Pacing the Frontier petition, where over 1,100 employees from places like OpenAI, Google DeepMind, and Meta are essentially asking the US government to step in and act as a global gatekeeper.
Coordinated pacing. I love that. It's such a polite, academic way of saying, we've built something we can't control, so please, someone in Washington, pass a law that slows everyone else down so we can catch our breath.
It's more than just a breather, though, it's a strategic pivot. Anthropic's Dario Amodei is proposing specific interventions like enforcing chip export controls to China and cracking down on what he calls industrial-scale distillation. The goal isn't just to stop people from accessing the models, but to prevent the high-efficiency recycling of US-led breakthroughs by foreign adversaries.
Right, because distillation is the new frontier of AI warfare. It's not about stealing the secret recipe. It's about using the master chef's expensive ingredients to quickly train a much cheaper, much faster imitation.
So here's the picture. The AI Daily Brief noted that the competitive landscape has shifted from preventing model access to preventing this precise mechanism of using proprietary-grade intelligence to accelerate the training capabilities of competing nation-states. It turns AI policy from a domestic regulatory issue into a direct instrument of AI hegemonism and trade warfare.
And while the labs are busy lobbying for these guardrails, the actual security situation is getting, well, messy. I keep hearing about unprecedented security breaches, which is just a euphemism for the attackers are now using the same automation we are.
The recent Hugging Face incident is the perfect example. An OpenAI agent was involved in a breach where the sheer volume of attacker actions, over 17,000 in just 2.5 days, effectively overwhelmed human defenders by hiding exploits within a massive sea of low signal noise. The AI Daily Brief argued that this proves the shift from theoretical risk to a concrete security reality. Unreleased internal models can now be used as tools for unauthorized data storage and outbound relays.
So we're moving toward a world where low-severity bugs are basically just building blocks for a larger automated heist. It makes the traditional patch the big hole's first strategy look a bit cute, doesn't it?
It does because, as AI Insights pointed out, attackers can now weaponize these minor flaws to chain together complex, working exploits at machine speed. This is happening right as the Trump administration faces an August 1st deadline to establish a formal U.S. AI safety testing framework, following that June executive order.
Which brings us to the great open v. closed debate. On one side, you have the giants like OpenAI and Anthropic lobbying to curb open models. On the other, you have a massive coalition including Meta and IBM arguing that open weights are essential for innovation and safety.
The tension is fundamentally economic. Ram Ahluwalia argues that distillation is actually a healthy capitalist driver, much like how the Wright brothers' innovations were refined by others to scale the industry. He posits that open weights serve as a public good by providing low-cost, abundant intelligence.
But there's a massive geopolitical asterisk here. If a Chinese model like Kimi K3 can provide similar utility at a fraction of the cost, the economic incentive for US-based token-selling business models starts to evaporate.
True, though the efficiency gap is still significant. These Chinese models often require more than double the token usage to achieve comparable results to models like Opus or F1. However, Lorenzo Valent raised a critical point in the debate. Even if the performance is there, the security risks of foreign-developed open-weight models could lead to bans similar to what we saw with Huawei equipment in Europe.
It's a total deadlock. You have the US trying to protect its intellectual property and value capture, while the infrastructure reality, the actual power in chips, is being stretched to the limit.
It's also about the broader sovereignty piece. As the rest is money highlighted, true AI sovereignty requires three pillars: local value capture, control over critical inputs like chips, and a seat at the global governance table. Without all three, you're just a consumer, not a player.
The regulators in Washington better move fast, because the technology isn't waiting for a committee meeting.
Keep a close eye on that August 1st deadline for the new U.S. safety testing framework. If the administration fails to deliver a concrete mechanism, the pacing movement might lose its political leverage.
The window for voluntary industry standards is closing. But if the models are getting smarter, does the money follow the intelligence or the infrastructure? Let's look at how autonomous agents are starting to rewrite the rules of decentralized finance. 87% of all venture capital is now effectively just a bet on AI, which is a staggering concentration of capital for a single thesis. It feels like we've moved past AI integration and straight into a world where every single asset class is just a different flavor of the same silicon-driven contagion.
That's exactly the point. As Prof. G. Markets noted, the traditional 60-40 portfolio is losing its diversification benefit because AI has become a systemic contagion across everything from US equities to public credit. But the real shift is happening at the intersection of that compute power and blockchain, moving us into what is being called agentic finance.
Agentic finance sounds like a high-end brand of autonomous luxury SUVs.
It's actually much more structural. We're seeing a move toward a system where AI agents act as independent economic actors. They use blockchain infrastructure to autonomously settle micropayments for APIs and execute complex, model-driven hedge fund strategies. Think of companies like Jeeves, Infinia, or BlindPay. They are building the rails so that an agent can hire a model or buy data without a human ever clicking approve.
We're replacing human error with algorithmic efficiency, which leads to bots trading with bots, which leads to flash crashes managed by even more bots, which eventually leads to my smart fridge trying to short the S&P 500 during my breakfast.
It could resolve the rational actor fallacy in crypto. Humans have bounded rationality and limited attention, agents don't. They can manage high-frequency, microtransactional incentives that are too granular for us to track. In a mature ecosystem, models will act like protocols with limited fee extraction power, while inference providers act as the liquidity providers earning yield on capital.
It sounds efficient until you realize that autonomy is just a fancy word for untraceable.
That is the regulatory frontier. Unchained argues the regulatory scope of DeFi is shifting from a focus on decentralization to a focus on control, where the legal trigger is simply whether a specific group can change core protocol functions. We might see FATF's recent guidance move toward on-chain native compliance, where traditional KYC is replaced by blockchain analytics and the technical ability to freeze assets directly.
It's a massive shift in how power is exercised.
Stepping back, the value is moving away from proprietary moats and toward the layers built on top, like liquidity and distribution.
Institutional investors will need to rethink how they audit any protocol where a control group can flip a switch on risk parameters. Watch for the first major DeFi hack where the perpetrator is an autonomous agent with no identifiable wallet history that will break the current compliance model. But if these agents can move capital this fast, it makes the escalating tension over the hardware that powers them even more volatile. I was looking at my grocery receipt this morning and realized I'm paying a premium for everything. It turns out chiflation is officially hitting the tech sector too.
It's more than just a catchy term. The massive 80% to 90% surge in memory prices we saw in Q2 is creating a massive supply chain shock. Bloomberg Daybreak, Asia Edition noted that a timing mismatch is the culprit, where suppliers are locked into 3 to 5 year fixed price contracts, causing them to miss out on these massive quarterly rallies.
Everyone is basically stuck paying last year's prices for much higher value silicon.
We can trace that further, that price volatility is driving a massive shift in the global hierarchy. As Ms. Huang pointed out, the expansion of CXMT is being fueled by these global shortages, allowing Chinese DRAM to compete based on sheer availability rather than just cost. It's a geopolitical pincer movement.
Wait, so US lawmakers are warning Apple against using Chinese chips, but simultaneously, the government is literally handing out subsidies that encourage using hardware made in China. Honestly, the logic is so circular it's almost impressive.
It is absurd, but the macro reality is stark. Bloomberg Daybreak, Europe Edition highlighted a 17% plunge in SK Hynix shares, despite a 557% jump in operating profit, because investor expectations for AI returns have simply outpaced what even record-breaking fundamentals can deliver.
It sounds like the AI hype phase is officially hitting a wall.
The data tells a story. Paul Krugman argued that the decline in the KOSPI index is acting as a specialized barometer for AI capital expenditure health. It signals a crisis of faith regarding the immediate ROI of these massive investments. We are seeing a transition from hype to a demand for proven economic payoffs.
Enterprise architects need to recalibrate their hardware procurement timelines to account for this memory price volatility. Watch for the next round of quarterly CapEx reports from Microsoft to see if their spending actually begins to move the needle on AI revenue. As we wrap up this edition, the through line across everything we've discussed today, from the Strait of Hormuz to the surge in memory prices, is the collapse of the frictionless assumption. We are witnessing the systematic dismantling of the globalized, low-cost era, replaced by a reality where every node in the supply chain, every line of code, and every interest rate move is being re-engineered for strategic leverage rather than mere economic throughput.
And the single most critical implication here is the fundamental shift in how the Trump administration must approach trade architecture. The calculus for Washington has moved beyond simple tariff battles. They are now navigating a landscape where the very stability of the U.S. economy is tied to managing interdependent vulnerabilities. If the administration continues to lean into aggressive export controls and decoupling without securing the foundational layers of the green energy and pharmaceutical supply chains, they risk inadvertently subsidizing the very China shock too they are trying to prevent. The cost of achieving sovereignty might actually be a permanent, structural increase in domestic inflation and computing costs.
It's a high-stakes game where the margin for error is shrinking as we move toward autonomous actors and more volatile bond markets.
To see if this structural shift is truly hardening, keep a close eye on the next Treasury auction results. If we see a significant divergence in long-term yields that defies the Fed's current forward guidance, it will confirm that the market has officially stopped listening to central bank rhetoric and has started pricing in a high-friction, high-cost world.
That's the signal that will tell us if the era of predictable policy is officially behind us. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.